Hello, and welcome to episode 8 of the Pocket Dojo podcast, where we talk about making the world a better place by making better things.
If you're watching us regularly, you may have noticed that we've skipped an episode because I was unwell. But today I'm back in the saddle and we're talking about team development. Paul, what's in store in today's episode?
Well, we're going to think about different kinds of teams and the challenges that they commonly face.
And then we'll take a look at some of the work that Paul and I have done with these different kinds of teams and how we want to develop teams of the future in different ways.
Great. And we'll go deeper into these elements in more depth in future episodes. But for now, let's get started. In its broadest sense, a team is obviously made up of individuals who come together on specific tasks so they can achieve common objectives and targets together. Be that sales process improvement, governance, building a house, or winning a football match. And indeed, any other activity that we can't do effectively alone.
Traditionally, we've considered it important to create some kind of structure for our teams, clear roles, responsibilities, accountabilities, communication flows, measurements, rewards, whatever, to get things done. But in the complex world we live in today, teams can also look and feel quite different. The most popular kind of organisational teams include those that solve problems. So they assemble rapidly, temporarily, to address a crisis or something unplanned, so that an organisation can alleviate risks and develop solutions across different businesses or operational areas. This kind of team delivers outcomes that in essence are recommendations.
Then there's self-organising work teams, who are responsible for delivering a product or a service and spend much of their time implementing and revising solutions. They typically do interdependent tasks and have some kind of supervisory responsibility, whether that's ensuring work is adequately scheduled, planned, or dealing with customers and helping make operational decisions. As the name suggests, they may not have a manager to guide them.
Then there are cross-functional teams, so made up of people at a similar level in an organisational hierarchy who work in different departments. They coordinate to address complex projects, perhaps in industrial design, manufacturing and operations, where both rapid completion of tasks and innovation are important. People are chosen for their experience, skills and agility, so they can get things done fast and juggle several projects at the same time. Cross-functional teams can be really challenging to manage as there may not be one clear leader and competing priorities can often lead to workplace conflict.
And then there's virtual teams who, as many of us have experienced in recent years, are not physically close, but work through digital technology to stay connected and to work on common goals. They can always interact and be informed at any time. People have mixed feelings and results from remote team working. Some people love it and feel much more engaged and productive than they did in a physical office space with all its distractions. Other people hate it, missing the dynamism of in-person interaction and quick responses. One of the big challenges organisations have organising remotely at scale is how to engage and manage different generations who have diverse, perhaps even conflicting ways of working and skills.
And then there's a team of teams, perhaps my personal favourite, who bring together teams from different departments to achieve bigger goals for the organisation as a whole. They're larger than a cross-functional team, but obviously smaller than the organisation itself. But this way of doing things helps an organisation to solve really complex challenges which need greater coordination and expertise. Leaders in a team of teams have to maintain relationships across a whole wide range of areas rather than driving their own team to achieve results. In other words, they need to be enablers for whatever the group needs, not just their area of accountability. A lot of people find this kind of leadership really challenging. It seems to go against the grain of how they've been taught to lead and rewarded for doing. So Paul, what kind of teams have you worked with among that list? What challenges did you help them with?
Oh my goodness. So my background is in management consulting, so I was very lucky to work with a whole range of different teams and problems. I think one of the most challenging problems tended to be the global organisations where we were working across business geographies and across different functions, trying to standardise processes, or trying to standardise a technology. So you'd have an organisation that had several different CRM systems around the world, and that was costing them more money than was needed, because there was multiple licenses, there was multiple support contracts, there was all kinds of things that was going on. There was duplication of effort, there was no sharing of knowledge. So we'd work with the teams to sort of go through that alignment process, for want of a better expression. I've also worked with leadership teams, so leadership teams that have needed to come together, particularly during and after the pandemic, where they've said, well, we started out, we only had 3 members of the leadership team, but now there's 10 of us, we've not actually met in the room, and now we need to agree, well, what is our purpose, what is our vision, what is our mission, can we actually get an alignment around that where we're all agreed, and then we know how we're going to move forward. So I've worked with teams in the software industry to do that, and I've worked with teams in boutique consultancy, and also in advanced technologies in the medical sphere. So those, yeah, the experience is quite deep and wide, which is why I enjoy this topic. How about you, Asha? Tell us a little bit about your experience.
That sounds great, Paul. So I've worked with actually all the kind of teams that we've just mentioned, except for crisis or risk management things, groups that teams that come together to put out a particular fire. That's not really the area that I've been asked to come into. I guess because I've worked in industry for a long time, in particular, I've supported a lot of cross-functional teams, multinational ones, who were working for the most part remotely, also before the pandemic, to be honest, because they're located in different sites and countries, as part of global organisations. I've seen them struggle with a number of things in common, actually. I mean, firstly, obviously, getting to know each other and developing trust, particularly when they're under pressure and remote. I think that's also true for teams that are working hybrid in the same office space, particularly if they have a very high technical focus at the end of the day. Or also where people believe that the national or local culture expects them to deliver, rather than spending their time building relationships. Or also when people are more introverted, I've seen those kind of commonalities, let's say. Another challenge is I've seen often, is people pulling in different directions, again, particularly when they're under pressure, and or competing against each other for what they think they perceive to be limited resources or possibilities, for personal promotion and progression. That's always a big thing. I guess those dynamics are common enough in large organisations, but I've also seen similar things in organisations when they try to grow or scale really rapidly. And then I guess the third big challenge is being able to agree even different ways to approach similar challenges. So experiment to see what works and adapt as they go along. I think there's still really strong beliefs that we need to get things right, make them work better, that it's not okay by learning to make mistakes. And then, associated behaviours to match. So I've, again, like you, worked with all sorts of teams. Some of them have been really senior leadership teams. Other occasions, it's been teams that are lower down in a hierarchy but still need to get really important things done, so particularly cross-functional kind of things. I've also worked with, functional teams in a particular area, so marketing, some sales stuff, some strategy stuff. Really quite a wide range, so wide and deep, just like you said, Paul. I'd love to also hear a little bit more about some of the specific work you've done. So what's a project that's particularly stuck in your mind and heart these last few years, and also why?
I think there's one that comes to mind, so that I know I'm doing a good job with a team when I'm no longer needed. So which sounds like a strange thing to say, but usually when you come to a team situation and there is some kind of misalignment or dysfunction, or there's kind of pressure that's causing a mismatch and a misuse of resources, then bringing that together, and there comes a point in the process where the team starts to get what it is they should be doing in terms of collaboration and supporting each other. And when you see that happen, that's actually the reward for me of doing that. So I've been in one particular situation, which was glorious. We actually did a three-day offsite, which was a big, intense piece of work. And by the morning of the third day, we literally almost were bystanders. We were almost just timekeepers going, saying, this is great, great discussion, great in terms of the output. So it was working with a software software provider in the SaaS space, and they brought their leadership team together, which was about 12 people with different factions. They were going through a time of change where they were starting that process of really scaling up. So they've been successful, they got some traction. One of their subsidiaries in one particular geography was broken. And I find what is interesting, and it's certainly true when you're coaching, I don't know if you find this too, is that the problem that presents itself when you sit down and you go, so how can I help? And they say, well, the problem's this and we need to do that, and can you organize a workshop and structure it this way to get these outcomes? The problem that they talk about is never the problem that's the real problem. And I think, again, what's rewarding is when that pops out on its own. You're not trying to shame people. You're not trying to make people feel uncomfortable. It's just kind of like, look, I can see it. I can sense it. I can almost articulate it, but wrong for me to put it into your words. What are your words? So I find one particularly memorable one was, day three. We didn't do much. We felt slightly guilty on the one hand, but on the other hand, we got them to express the problem itself, which was, actually, we need to go back to our investors and tell them bits of our organization are broken and we need more time to fix it. We also need some more money. It wasn't necessarily just about, can we define what our purpose, mission and values is and get an alignment on that. That was the way into the conversation. The real conversation was, how do we talk to our investors? Which was great.
Yeah, brilliant.
How about you?
Brilliant.
I'm sort of curious. I'm sure you've experienced similar things too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, perhaps that's part of the real value that we add, is helping people to get, to the heart of the matter. So it's not what the symptoms on the surface or whatever, how we want to describe that, you know, will often feel like that's the issue. And then it just takes a little bit of exploring to realize that that's not the case at all. So like you, Paul, I've done lots of, you know, different projects, different kind of teams, different industries, different geographies, different age groups, all kind of things. Several of them have stayed with me for a while, perhaps because of, well, I think, you know, probably definitely because of the significant shifts that people were able to make. You know, when we can hold the space for that deeper transformation to take place, like you just described. So I think one that I haven't shared so far, which is, you know, more regenerative in a way, is from a client that I worked with some years ago in Brunei, I think you say in English, don't you? So in all honesty, I went with a colleague who invited me. She'd actually got the project and she asked me to go with her. In all honesty, we weren't really sure about going. So we were two ostensibly white women traveling alone to, you know, and around a country with an absolute monarchy and Sharia law. So we were not convinced about going, you know, to be completely frank. We were going on behalf of a large international organization that she worked for and I'm a partner with, to one of their clients. So we didn't have doubts about our safety in that way, but we were more concerned about what we might actually be able to address. And at the same time, we were curious and excited, and let's be honest, that kind of opportunity doesn't at least drop in my lap every single day. So we were commissioned actually to develop a leadership program for, I think, something like the top 150 of the organization. I don't quite remember, it's a few years ago. But I do remember that they needed to cooperate much more effectively with one another and improve the commercial focus of the organization because their major backer had changed direction, let's say. So in other words, they needed to become a really good team of teams, not just one coherent unit. So they'd already started doing some internal analysis using some particular instruments. So we decided that, you know, rather than have them start all over over again and do it our way, we would use those, you know, build on the instruments that they were using and what was possible to learn from them into the design of the program. So we had two 4-day programs running in two consecutive weeks, so back to back, which was quite full on, with half the participants in each program in 1 week, and then split into two between the two of us in different groups in different rooms, so that we facilitated at the same time. So the first 2 days of the program focused on learning more about ourselves, what's important to us, supported by analysis that the leaders have been doing, so that they could find a more authentic voice and feel confident about using it. But then to look at our impact on others and the contribution that we make, and to demonstrate that through our interactions and our communications. In other words, I prefer the expression actually to talk the walk, to role model that what we needed to do. And then day three was a simulation where participants could play and experiment with doing things in ways that felt challenging through a game. So things that felt challenging or even new in a safe, fun environment that mirrored their daily life. So during the game, we mixed up the two groups of participants. They had a much more realistic opportunity to practice, and then dedicated some space to deepening their awareness and embodying, practicing certain behaviours that were organisationally and culturally much more challenging, but we felt were really valuable. And then finally, on day four, we encouraged everyone to exchange feedback or feed forward on what they discovered and learned. So, you know, this was a structured leadership program, and they were, at the end of the day, there was an emerging leadership framework, let's say, that they were going to put into practice and then measure themselves against, so that they could dialogue and agree on beginning, how to develop their own teams and weave a new organizational culture. That was kind of the essence of the program. What made this particular project, notable for us, or for me, was that there were good examples of regenerative practice in the project. There was a lot of zooming in and out, see how we create our experience instead of being it something that happens to us. Also finding our own voice, stepping into our own power, telling truth in ways that can be heard and addressed also to those that we think have power over us. And reframing to see where we can act and put our energy and resources to create good conditions. So we intended all of those things. They weren't surprising. It was really good to see them. But what was really amazing, Paul, was, particularly given the context that we were working in, was the power of the women's voices that emerged across the team, and how the men naturally, spontaneously shifted their own responses and changed their behaviour. It was incredible. So from being in a really quite dominant position before the programme, they were suddenly really happy and even grateful that women were speaking to and about the things that perhaps they'd found really difficult, that hadn't been working for some time and for whatever reason they hadn't addressed. So everyone was so grateful and happy that they'd been able to have this experience, and they really didn't want us to leave.
Fantastic. I bet that was unusual for them and that they were really grateful. It also sounds like you all got to a deeper level of meaning and flow together in those days.
Yeah, absolutely. It was a really lovely experience also for us.
Wonderful. So, looking to the future, how do you see collective development needs to change in the future, Asha?
So I'm just going to introduce this approach here today, and we'll explore it more deeply next time, and when we start looking at frameworks for team development. I think, Paul, the kind of teams that we're going to need going forwards are intrinsically linked to how we design our organisations so they can really bring value to society. So, traditionally we've tried to create robust organisations with vertical structures or matrices, and therefore teams that focus on improving efficiency as the organisation gets better. Then we started to see, I think in the last years, lots of new organisational models and forms of governance emerging, especially in the impact sector, more recently. And I guess those structures aim to offer more agility, adaptability, resilience in a challenging marketplace. So obviously these organisations are purpose-driven, they're often focused on climate, social or other kinds of change, beyond making just profit. So I think leaders in these all kind of organisations are increasingly finding that they need to work in let's say, just-in-time or cross-functional teams as the organisation grows. So they can enable innovation of business and operating models, deliver excellent quality in whatever they do, and reinvent themselves fast so they can just disrupt entire sectors, you know, particularly if they want to make real impact. What do you see differently, if anything, Paul?
No, I get a sense of a similar view, is that the purpose of, you know, it's really thinking about what a team is, you know, and how we traditionally approach that. So I remember doing a large project. It was a pan-European project. We were actually reorganizing the sales and marketing function for a large FMCG across Western and Eastern Europe. So it was huge in terms of what we were trying to do. We were working with the senior leadership teams of each country. And it just the start point was, how do we draw the organogram, the organization chart? You know, what does that need to look like, and who sits in what slots, and who deserves to go there, and who do we want to move into this role, and those kinds of things. And I think that's an about face of way of doing it today. I think we need to focus much more on what is it that this team is coming together to accomplish, and therefore what is the appropriate structure to do that, and actually the team only becomes a team and works as a team when it actually moves together and starts to interact. Sitting on paper, it's not what we think. We have a mental model that's what a team is. You know, in sport, we'll look at a team sheet before the actual live game shown on TV, and yet it's what happens on the field of play that determines the effectiveness of a team for a particular task. So one of the things I see coming through is this encouragement of, think about what a team is. The other thing I want to encourage people to think about is, you know, it's not what you've done in the past that matters as to whether you're suitable for the team. There is some of that, but in the old model, that was the predominant way of looking at it. It's like, have you got the experience, and therefore are you a valuable member of the team? I think we are sufficiently in a place now where, to some extent, to use an old sporting analogy, you know, the view that if you're good enough, you're old enough. Then the traditional what gets you on the team sheet needs to be revisited. And I think those are two things that, you know, whichever type of team that we've talked about, you look at, are going to be lenses that people are going to need to look through to change the effectiveness of what is actually delivered by that group of people for the period that they are brought together to do a piece of work.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's all really about, you know, rethinking the design of our organisations, isn't it, so that they can be of value, and then learning and practicing our way into the future and doing that in ways that are flexible, Outlook just beeping at me, I'll switch that down off in the next podcast episode. It's really about, you know, yeah, practice, I think, is what I'm really taking from that now. So today we thought about different kinds of organisational teams and what it means to be part of them.
And we've also reflected on some of the challenges that these kinds of teams face, both in leading them and being part of them.
We've also shared some of our own experiences of working with and developing these kind of teams,
and how we might need to develop our teams differently in the future.
As always, we'll be writing more about these topics on Substack. You can find Paul's post at The Pocket Dojo and my own at Learning Through Doing.
Join us again in 2 weeks' time for episode 9, taking a deeper dive into how we might develop our teams differently in the future. You can watch The Pocket Dojo podcast on all your favourite channels. And you can also follow us on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. Bye for now.
See you soon.